Happy New Year, everybody! Welcome back to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Adam Azer, Scott White, Chris Towers. Heath Cummings still enjoying his 4-week-long vacation, Chris?
You're
Heath's keeper.
Something. Well, I don't know. I actually have no idea when he gets back. He could be off all of January.
He gets back tomorrow, I think. Yeah. But we're doing this show beforehand. We're also doing a fantasy football mock draft later today.
Of course
for some reason.
Are.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. Why not? This is the time of year, Adam. This year transition where I get really confused whenever I write about the upcoming season, because I get used to thinking, you know, at the end of the year, November, December, oh, I gotta write about next year. I gotta write about the 2017 instead of 2016. But now it's actually 2017.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna convince myself, oh, I'm writing about next year, 2018.
You know, it's really
don't
confusing.
Do that.
Don't do that.
What's really confusing is I just finished the 2016 football season. I'm preparing for the 2017 baseball season, and I'm currently writing about the 2016-17 basketball season.
You do have to appreciate baseball as a one-year
football sport. For the most until the playoffs.
But you have to like a team wins the Super Bowl, the 2007 champions won the 2008 Super Bowl.
Yeah,
that
that's
kind
awkward.
Of thing.
I hate that.
You got to appreciate baseball staying in one calendar year, and you got to appreciate the Indians. What looks like a steal with Edwin Encarnacion, a 3-year, $65 million. At one point, he had a 4-year, $80 million deal on the table from the Blue Jays. Did not take that. That offer got pulled from the table, and now the Indians side Edwin Encarnacion. So we will talk about him. We will look at his home road splits, having been a little out of whack with Toronto in two of the last three seasons. We are going to talk about three players that Chris is higher on than the industry consensus, and three players that Chris is lower on. And then we're going to let Scott pick it apart, disagree or agree. We have emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And we are going to actually start with two emails, and they are sort of introductory. I thought this would be a good way to start 2017?
17.
Okay, 2017 with two sort of welcome to fantasy baseball emails. This one is from Rennie. And he says, "My name is Rennie. I am a baseball fan, but I don't know a thing about fantasy baseball, and I'm very familiar with fantasy football. But how do I get started on fantasy baseball? Any podcast you've done in the past that breaks down everything for beginners? I feel like a lost sheep, and any help would be great." Okay, no, we don't have any previous episodes that I can think of, but let's do it now. So let's do this for a few minutes. Intro to fantasy baseball. Take it away. Scott.
that's kind of a big apple to bite into, but I would say if you're already familiar with fantasy football, it should be pretty easy.
Yeah, you have the basic mechanics.
It's the same sort of deal. Obviously, what players are doing in real life that benefits your fantasy team. If you play in a head-to-head points league, then there's even a more direct correlation with football, because that's kind of fantasy football scoring, where each statistical contribution is worth a set number of points. The more traditional way to play fantasy baseball is a roto or category style format.
Let's back up though. Let's go like really basic.
Really basic. Okay.
Fantasy baseball, just like fantasy football, you get in a league with your friends. Big difference is the length of the season, right? So fantasy football usually ends in week 16 out of 17. Most people play fantasy baseball right up into the end until week 26. Now, we argue about when it should end. I like it to end a little earlier. Regardless, most people usually – you can do whatever you want. Most people usually play right up into the end until week 26. So it's a much longer season.
Yep.
And you play, you know, and you can either play in a weekly format, as Scott was alluding to. We'll get into points versus Rota with email of the day number two.
Okay.
But you can either play in a weekly format where you're going up head-to-head against a player in, or another person in your league.
And if you're playing – if you're someone who's played fantasy football, and most of the people who play fantasy sports play fantasy football primarily, you should probably transition – if you want to play fantasy baseball, you should transition into a weekly head-to-head format. It's a much – it's what you're used to. It has some of the same – mechanics as fantasy football. It's also just a little, I think it's a little easier to follow.
Absolutely.
Probably a lot easier to follow. A lot easier for a beginner to get into. You don't have to deal with season-long trends. You don't have to ride the up and downs and figure out, well, this guy's slumping. Do I cut him now, or is his overall production? It's much more straightforward.
Yeah. So, and the same thing. You get a record, you wins and losses. Whoever has the best record makes the playoffs. You face off in the playoffs, you win a championship, hopefully. Usually draft a catcher first base, second base, third base, shortstop, three outfielders, maybe a utility, which is a DH. And then let's say five starting pitchers and two relievers. And then you have a bench that you can do whatever you want with. Yeah. So that's basically, it's really simple. Your players do well, you get points for it. Your players don't do well, you don't get as many points. That's points. I think that's pretty much an introductory. That's email of the day number one, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's one way to play. Let's go on to email of the day number two from Tyler in Minneapolis. Tyler was recently listening to one of our points leagues mock draft reviews. And he says, I realize there's still a lot of the lingo and strategy between formats that I'm not familiar with. I was wondering if you were planning or could plan on talking to the beginner and explaining format strategies. What the heck is points versus roto versus head-to-head? Important stat categories for each, things like that.
Well, so, yeah, there you kind of listed three formats there, points, roto, head-to-head. Really, there are two, when it comes to evaluating players, there are two formats we're talking about. We're talking about points leagues and we're talking about categories leagues. Now, Roto falls under the categories umbrella as head-to-head categories leagues do. And really with the points format, you're usually talking about a head-to-head points leagues. There aren't many, just straight points leagues.
Yeah.
But the big difference is... kind of like I was saying earlier, points leagues are fantasy football style scoring where every contribution a player makes is worth a predetermined number of points. Like, for example, a home run's worth 4 points. You usually get a point for a run and an RBI on top of it. So a solo home run's usually going to give you 6 points in a standard.
Four for the home run, one for the run, one for the RBI. Also, if you're a veteran, skip ahead a couple of minutes here.
Yeah.
So I know this is probably boring you, but it's January 3rd, so this is a good time to do it.
Yeah, and then categories leagues, which we kind of shorthand by saying roto a lot of times, it's usually 5x5, let's say, 5 pitching categories you're dealing with, 5 hitting categories you're dealing with, and where your team ranks in each of those individual categories.
All right. Well, hold on. All right, here we go.
There are 12 teams in every league.
Mm-hmm. Hold on. Okay, because now we're getting into roto. if you want to do head to head format, which you should, you can either do head to head points. Like me and Chris face off 1 week, and my roster scores more points than him. I win. I'm 1-0. Or head to head categories, because categories you can do either points or you can do either head to head or you can do like season long roto. So categories, head to head categories, 10 categories, 5 hitting, 5 pitching. If I have a more home runs, if my team has more home runs than Chris for the week, better batting average, more RBIs, more saves, more wins, and a lower ERA, and he wins the other 4, I win 6 categories, he wins 4 categories, I win the week.
Yeah. And then you have, sometimes you get 6 wins in a week, sometimes... That's stupid.
No, that's
you
the
get
best
one
way
win.
To do it.
You get one win.
No, you should not go 1-0.
It doesn't matter.
You should go 6-4. If you win 6 of the 10 categories, you should go 6-4 for the week. But fine, you want to make it 1-0.
To quote, make it 1-0. I mean, I think that's the best synthesis, because you do have to take into account, like in Roto, what's different about that compared to fantasy football or head-to-head points for baseball is you have to take into account the fact that there are guys who are productive and still hurt you. And so it adds a whole lot of nuance and context to the game.
Don't do category. Do points. It's just to get your feet wet.
Yeah, if you're a true beginner, head-to-head points is the easiest way to get into it.
Now, last thing is season-long roto.
Yeah. And
my least favorite.
Yeah, don't play it. Just
and it's in terms of evaluating players, it's similar to head-to-head categories. It's still you're dealing with the 5x5 categories and how players perform in each of those individual categories as opposed to the complete package of a player like a points league.
Right.
Because, you know, if you're limiting it to 5 hitting categories, 5 pitching categories, you know, that's not going to reward everything a player does like a points league does. You know, second base, doubles and triples, they're usually not accounted for in categories leagues. But Roto's, the roto format specific, that style of categories play, how you perform in each of the individual categories, where you rank among the 10, 12, however many leagues.
Let's say 12 people, not leagues, Participants. Let's say 12-team league, and you've got 10 categories. If you have the most home runs at the end of the year, you get 12 points for that. Yep. If you have the second most home runs, you get 11 points for that. If you have the fewest, you get 1 point for that. And if you have the best ERA, you get 12 points for that.
Roto, season-long Roto rewards the team that is best, whatever word you want to use there, the team that is most active usually.
But you have to be active.
It takes a lot of the luck out of it. A lot of people like that about it. I think the luck is what makes fantasy sports fun.
There
needs to be, if you want people to stay interested, because that's a problem in all fantasy leagues, is keeping people invested. You don't want to play against a guy who hasn't touched his roster in 2 months. You know,
I'm going to tell you, when we do our auction league, like I'm kicking some people out because it's pathetic. It ends up being six people participating in the league, and I hate it.
It's Roto.
Well,
but even still, they draft and they don't play.
That's the downfall of Roto is because it kind of takes away the randomness of the playoffs. Like in baseball, you could critique the real life baseball playoffs the most dominant team during the
regular
season
doesn't
always
win. You could argue the best team in the Major League Baseball playoffs has won like two of the last seven World Series.
Yeah, but
at the
same time,
the 09 Yankees and the 2016 Cubs were probably the only two teams that you could say were the best and then won the World Series.
But the playoffs get great ratings and we're all interested. We all love watching it. It makes baseball more interesting having that playoffs, even if you don't feel like in the end the best team is rewarded. And so that's kind of the upside of head to head versus Roto. You know, by August in a Roto league, and there's a good chance it's going to be between one, two, maybe three teams, and one guy may be running away with it.
And head to head shortens, the season, which is another bonus.
Yeah,
right. You usually have like a 20-week regular season. So, in summary, when we say point, we're going to try not to say on this podcast head to head league because that could mean head to head points or head to head categories.
Points and
when we say points, we're talking about a points league. You get a point for this, you get 3 points for that, whatever. When we say categories, we're talking about, the five by five.
This is the worst call and response for a concert I've ever heard.
What do you mean?
When we say points, we're talking,
I don't know that.
Just trying to make a joke.
Oh, that's very funny. Very funny, girl. That's a joke. So,
Thanks. Anyway, I really appreciate it.
And in terms of drafting, if you're in a head-to-head points league as opposed to a categories league, unless the categories league includes on-base percentage, walk to strikeout ratio is something that is much more relevant in a points league. Also, doubles and triples,
yes,
and innings for pitchers. So I think that's probably the biggest.
Yeah, a way to shorthand it would be.
We haven't shorthanded very well.
Well, the cumulative numbers are more valuable in a points league.
Yep.
Counting stats versus ratio stats are more valuable in a Roto league or categories league.
And you can probably more easily survive injuries or extended absences in season-long Roto.
Yeah. All right. News and notes. Only one. Cleveland signed Edwin Encarnacion.
They did.
Encarnacion has been a top four first baseman 2 years in a row, at least 2 years in a row, probably more than that. Although he usually misses 12, 15 games a year. Last year, not so much. He played almost the whole season. Five straight years for Encarnacion with 34 or more homers, 39 or more in three of those five, 104 or more RBIs in four of his last five seasons. Basically, Encarnacion has erupted in his last 5 years with the Blue Jays. He's been very consistent, 263 to 280 batting average, 34 or more home runs, and 100 RBIs pretty much every year. Is he still a top four first baseman now going to Cleveland?
Top five, I would say, but it didn't change for me with this move. It's just there's also, Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Votto, Cabrera. Yep. Encarnacion happens to check in fifth, and he's the last player of that top tier in my mind. Now, Toronto, obviously a favorable place to hit. Cleveland actually
is, too.
It's
not a bad
too.
One. You look at the overall park factors. For the multi-year on Baseball Reference, Cleveland's 112. That's, favors batters 12% better than league average. Toronto actually a little worse over the multi-year, so that's surprising.
Really? Yeah, so I don't really think the park effects hurt him too much. There is the aspect of Toronto made Encarnacion who he is. He was pretty much ended up being a nothing with the Reds. And, and then he exploded with Toronto. They have a history of you know, reclaiming these sluggers. Jose Bautista being another big example. So just is that change in environment going to impact him negatively? I would say after 5 years of being the exact same player, I think he's pretty well locked into that. And I think the biggest risk to him declining is just the fact that he's turning 34 this week, actually.
And that wasn't
going to change no matter where he was. So I'm approaching him exactly the same with the Indians as I would have with the Blue Jays.
I think he's going to a better lineup.
I think so, yeah.
Right? I mean, they got a good team there. The top of the order should be really good for them. And I don't know. Mike Napoli
drove in 101 runs last year.
You can't count on 114 RBIs. That's a lot. But I think he can get 100, right? It wouldn't be a stretch. He had 127.
Yeah, he led the AL in our, maybe the league in RBI last year.
Yeah, AL.
But, you know, this is a team that scored a ton of runs last season. You look at the Indians lineup, they had three guys who scored at least 90 runs, five guys that scored at least 84. This is a very good lineup. They've got guys who get on base.
And they didn't have Brantley last year.
Yeah.
No.
They're replacing, like, Lonnie Chisenhall with Michael Brantley. That's going to be a nice upgrade.
Yeah.
And you got to be thrilled with this as an Indians fan because,
They got a better Mike Napoli.
They were a game away from winning the World Series last year, going the whole year without Brantley, going the whole playoffs without Carlos Carrasco, only having Andrew Miller for the final 2 months of the season. And now they get a better hitter than anyone they had last year in Encarnacion. So they're looking like they're in good shape for next year.
Does the fact that he had a 19.7% strikeout rate, which was by far his highest with Toronto, walk rate was normal, but did strike out more than we had seen. He had 138 strikeouts last year. Does it make you feel like he is showing signs of decline?
Sure. There is real I don't even know if bust is the right word. There's a real chance that he just falls off. We see that sometimes with guys in their mid-30s, that you just kind of unexpectedly hit a wall. That's how baseball works, but
Is he going to play first base or DH?
I would imagine he and Santana would switch off.
Because I want him DHing.
Okay.
DH.
Yeah, but for me, I don't think he's any more risky than anyone else. His strikeout rate was always really low for a slugger. He was between 10 and 15%.
Yeah. If you break it down by month, too, in April, he had 7 walks, 25 strikeouts. In July, he had 9 walks, 25 strikeouts. The other 4 months were pretty good. So I don't. And in fact, he's had 2 really bad Aprils in a row, and then he's been fine. So if he gets off to a slow start and you own Encarnacion, I wouldn't be too concerned.
And, you know, his swing strike rate actually didn't go up. His in-strike zone contact rate didn't go up. I'm not that worried about it.
All right. Let's do a couple things here on today's show before the emails. I'm going to give you a few scenarios. What's more likely to happen? This scenario A or scenario B? And then we're going to look at players that Chris is higher on than the industry and players that Chris is lower on than the industry. What's more likely to happen in 2017? Gary Sanchez is a bust or Russell Martin has a bounce back season?
I'm going to say probably Gary Sanchez is a bust. Now, it's kind of nice to see that he's going, what, sixth round?
Yeah.
So people haven't completely lost their minds over the performance he had last year. He's going about the same range as Lucroy, which I think makes sense. I'm not sure what Russell Martin really has to bounce back to. Like, he ended up
he was a top five. He was the number 4 catcher in 2015, down to number 7 in points, number 8 in Roto. He batted a 231.
Right, but that's the more typical Russell Martin season, too. I feel like 2015 was especially good for him.
Okay, I think he could get back to because it was 240 with 23 home runs. Last year, he hit 231 with 20 home runs. He also had nine fewer points in batting average, 14 fewer runs, 7 fewer doubles, 2 fewer triples. But I think, really, if you look at like his last 100 games...
Oh, yeah. Different player.
252 with 20 homers.
He was miserable the first 6 weeks
of
the year.
He was really bad.
It looked like he was done.
First 39 games, Russell Martin batted 172 with no homers.
Yeah. And he was striking out like every other at bat.
All right, so let me ask you this. How shocked would you be if Russell Martin had a better fantasy season than Gary Sanchez?
I would be pretty shocked. And I think you're probably going to see him go 100 spots later.
Yeah. Doing this research and looking at those last 98 games made me think, I kind of want Russell Martin.
Well,
it's because I don't invest much in catcher.
I think Russell Martin, being a 34-year-old himself this year, as great as he was over the last 4.5 months, it's not like I feel like that was more a regression to the mean than him emerging as this stud catcher, because he's so well established as what he is.
Yeah, that's fine, but it's still like getting him 240 with 20 home runs. Do you think he can do that?
Yes.
Yeah.
What round does he go in? Like 15th?
Considerably probably later than Sanchez. Yeah. It depends, one catcher, two catcher league.
A big part of Russell Martin's value over the last couple of seasons, though, has just been that he catches pretty much every day.
Yeah.
He caught 129 times in 2015, 137 times in 2006, or he was in the lineup that many times. There aren't a lot of catchers who are getting 500 plate appearances, and that. My thing with that is that's a good thing right up until it isn't. I feel like Hunter Pence is a good example of a guy like that where, the rate stats are just kind of okay, but if he's in the lineup every day, he's going to end up ranking pretty high.
Yeah.
But Russell Martin gets one foul ball off the wrist, all of a sudden you're looking at a lengthy DL stint and his...
Yeah, but how many... Pence is an outfielder, You can take high upside guys around when you were going to draft Pence a few years ago. Martin... as catcher.
If Sanchez does what I expect Sanchez to do, there's no way Martin could measure up to that. So if Martin outperforms him, it's because something went wrong for Sanchez.
Well, yeah, I hate taking early... I don't hate it. I'm afraid sometimes of taking early round picks on second year guys. Because it just happens. They just struggle.
No, I've gotten burned by that a lot over the years.
Right?
Yeah, but you don't... We were taking Carlos Correa in the first round last year.
Right, and he probably performed like, a third rounder?
Yeah.
I kind of feel like sixth round is like just beyond, it's technically not an early round pick.
Yeah,
right. I would have expected, based on how good he was, I would have thought, a couple months ago that Gary Sanchez was going to be a third or fourth round pick.
Right.
Okay.
And that would have been scary.
All right, what's more likely, Xander Bogaerts is a bust or Aledmys Diaz is a breakout? And they averaged just about the same amount of fantasy points per game last year.
I was like, Bogaerts. Maybe I know I've been skeptical of him for a couple of years now, and he mostly made me look dumb last year. But is he going to score 115 runs again? Is he going to drive in 89 again? I don't think there's any way he does either of those.
Well, he was during the best stretch of last season, which was basically the first half.
Yeah.
He was 369 BABIP in the first half, and we saw that correct in a major way the second half. He hit only 253. Now, still, he took a step forward power-wise,
yep.
And so, 20 home runs I think is a reasonable expectation. But based on the year Diaz had, I don't know that it's an unreasonable expectation for him. I don't know that I could call 2017, if Diaz – I don't think he can really break out more than he already has.
But he was on pace to be as good as Bogaerts, who finished as the fourth best shortstop.
No, I am much more likely to draft Diaz at his going rate than Bogaerts at his going rate, because I feel like I'm actually more confident. Looking peripherally what they do in terms of plate discipline, I feel more confident with what Diaz did last year on a per-game basis than what Bogaerts did.
To answer your question, Aledmys Diaz currently ranks 145th in the Fantasy Pros default rankings.
How did you know that was my question? Because I was like going to Fantasy
Pros. Yeah, he ranks 154th. I have him 71st. So I am much more likely to draft Aledmys Diaz, even though my ranking of Bogaerts is mostly in line with what the industry has as well.
Which is what?
In the 30s.
Okay. What's more likely to happen? George Springer plays his way into the first round in 2018, or Jackie Bradley is less than 50% owned by the All-Star break. Let me repeat that. It's a mouthful. George Springer, so good that he becomes a first-round pick in 2018, or Jackie Bradley, so bad that he's dropped in half our leagues by the All-Star break.
I think Bradley being dropped is much more likely.
Much more likely.
Not because I don't think George Springer... becoming a first rounder is unlikely. I think there's actually a decent chance of that. He just really just kind of needs to start running. the way he did in the minors.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
But Bradley, and I can't like totally make sense of it, I still feel like it's just...
He's so streaky.
And it just feels like the bottom could fall out at any moment. You know, the player he was in the minors is not at all the guy he's been in the majors. He was a high walk, pretty decent contact guy with kind of middling power, which, you know, he's not a big guy, so that's not surprising. The guy he's been basically over the last year and a half is a big power, you know, kind of all or nothing guy.
Scott, what's more likely, Springer first round in 2018 or Bradley dropped by the All-Star break?
Well, I'm actually going to say Springer is more likely, but kind of on a technicality, because I think that's I think 50% ownership threshold is so low. You know, there's just the number of five outfielder leagues out there. I don't think Bradley could be so bad that he's universally dropped.
60%? Does that make things a little more interesting?
I might go as high as 70. And look, that's kind of getting into internal stats that, you know, the majority of listeners probably don't pay attention to what a guy's ownership percentage is. But I do think there's some there, like Chris was saying, I'm not completely sure what kind of player Bradley is.
What's wrong with Chris? What? Why are you sniffling? What's going on over there?
It's fine.
It's winter. Right. Everybody's sick. Come on. No, like, it's true. Honestly, Chris summed it up nicely, I think. Springer.
Just run.
Just needs to run. And I do think there's a little more power potential there, too. It kind of...
He's been so consistent in that regard, though.
Well, no, last year didn't he... I'm trying to think of what the exact number was. I don't know if it was pull percentage or ground ball percentage, but something kind of changed to make him...
He did become more pull heavy. His pull percentage was up to 39%. Ground ball percentage was actually up last year.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like he something went wrong for him power wise.
He had 29 home runs, Springer.
Yeah,
but he had a 20% home run to fly ball ratio, which is very good. Yeah. And I think that's probably what you should expect. But
no, I just mean
you have those seasons every once in a while.
Yeah, no, that's kind of you have those seasons every once in a while where let me look at what the exact number is, so I'm not just.
And while you're doing that, 29 home runs is fine for 162 games. 29 doubles, 5 triples, it's kind of disappointing for him.
Yeah, you know, we have this list of stories that we're going to try to write about before the season, just kind of various topics, and one of them was who's going to be this year's Mark Trumbo. That's one of the ones I added. I feel like George Springer has a chance to be that. You know, just kind of has one of those seasons where he gets, you know, 5 to 8 more balls that instead of dying at the warning track go over the fence, and all of a sudden he's a first round value.
That's what I'm talking about. We've seen bigger home run potential from him in partial major league seasons, certainly in his minor league career. Yeah. I'm not convinced he's just a 25 to 30 homer guy.
Okay. Last one. We'll do this quickly here. What's more likely, Manny Machado wins the MVP or Jacob DeGrom wins the Cy Young?
Manny Machado.
Yeah.
But Mike Trout exists.
Yeah, because I was thinking Clayton Kershaw exists.
Clayton Kershaw exists.
Like, yeah.
Well, let's take that out of the equation. I mean, Machado.
Right, so Scott says that Mike Trout gets hurt in week one and Clayton Kershaw's out for the year by the end of April. So
no,
thanks,
I'm just
Scott.
Obviously there's a front runner in each of those leagues for awards. DeGrom is coming back from a season that was marred by elbow issues. Machado has no health concerns whatsoever.
And he's been an MVP caliber player the last 2 years. Like, if Mike Trout didn't exist, he would be an MVP candidate.
I'm not even sure Machado's 25 yet. So, health-wise, I don't think you could find a safer bet than him. And, you know, particularly if he gets some time at shortstop.
And he's been a top-five guy in MVP 2 years in a row.
Okay, I'm cool with that. And he's so good on defense.
He's a little bit underrated.
He's pretty awesome. Let's find out who Chris likes compared to the industry. Chris is higher on, he gave me 3 players, Yoan Moncada, Dylan Bundy, and Michael Brantley. Moncada, consensus fantasy pros?
Yes.
Ranking is 332.
Mm-hmm.
You have Moncada 220th overall.
And that's with me moving him down just because of the concerns about playing time. But I just... why can't he? He could be Trey Turner next year, right? Like, there are concerns about his playing time, but the White Sox are going to be bad.
Yeah.
How long can they afford to keep him down? If he has another minor league campaign like the one he just did, this guy really does have, not in the short term, but in the long term, the potential to be a top five fantasy player.
Yeah.
I want to draft that guy. And right now he's being ranked as if he shouldn't be drafted.
Yeah, I mean, five category threats. He was, you know, he's stolen base. I don't know if he led all the minors in steals, but he was certainly up there, just a ton of them. And that's not even supposed to be, like, his most significant tool. And once he gets to the majors, he's supposed to be a big power hitter, should hit for average, all of that. Yeah, I mean, I actually have him 198.
Mm-hmm.
You may have had him even higher than that.
I had him 104 before you guys kind of talked me out of it. I think
that's a big,
yeah.
104. So he went from 104 to 220 for you.
Mostly just because he probably won't open the season in the majors.
And he probably won't. They've basically said as much. He might only play 2/3 of the season in the majors. But, I mean, this has become kind of a normal thing, drafting prospects, high-end prospects who we feel like are going to get significant time in the majors at some point.
If he's
332 like the consensus, that's not a guy who's getting drafted in a Roto league. That's what these rankings are, by the way, Roto or categories rankings. And I actually think the format makes it easier for you to stash him because, A, steals are so critical. And that's the one thing you at least feel pretty confident he's going to provide when he does get to play. There are more middle infield spots to fill. He's going to be infield spots. Right
just,
now, he's third
just
base.
Just to say this, though, because I'm pretty sure if I recall, he was a must-add guy toward the end of last year when it seemed like his call-up was going to be imminent, and he was terrible.
Yeah, he struggled for 8 games. He had 12 strikeouts and 20 plate appearances. He was dreadful.
Yeah.
It was 8 games.
But Mike Trout will have 8 games that are roughly that bad.
Alex Bregman was terrible, and they let him ride it out, and he improved.
Yeah, it was mostly just that they called him up too late for any regression to happen. But you look at the minor league, he played 106 games, 94 runs, 62 RBI, 15 home runs, 45 steals, .294 average. If that's just if those numbers are just his full season ceiling, that's what, a second round guy?
15 like homers, 45 steals.
That's Jose Altuve before last season, right?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he's the...
I know
he's
it was
the top
minors.
Prospect. Moncada's the top prospect in baseball, and he already has gotten major league experience. Yeah. So it goes without saying he'll have more major league experience at some point this year. Like, top prospect in baseball who you know will contribute this year. Like, that's a guy who has to be drafted, and so... Top 200, I think, is fair.
Okay, would you take him? Let me look at your. What position is he at? Just outfield?
Moncada?
Third base.
Oh, third base.
Okay. Yeah, third base with the expectation he'll probably gain second base when he's up with the White Sox.
But all there's right. a chance he could be one of those second, third outfield guys, too.
There's a chance.
Well, we don't have rankings that go deep enough right now on the website, so I'm not going to ask you this guy or this guy. But I'll come back to that. Let's go to our next guy, Dylan Bundy. Dylan Bundy had a 5-start stretch where it looked like he was going to be completely awesome. He had a 1.84 ERA, gave up 15 hits and 5 walks in 29 and a third with 32 strikeouts. He finished the season with 8 starts after that, a 6 ERA. Bundy gave up 9 home runs in 39 innings, 43 hits, 22 walks. And 36 strikeouts, so he completely fell apart.
Yep.
But I'm with you, Chris. I really like Dylan Bundy. I think he's really good.
This was the consensus top pitching prospect in baseball before. I mean, I know he had
a lot of injuries.
A lot of injuries, but he's still only 23. He still came up and showed impressive stuff. Sitting mid 90s with the fastball, the changeup was a huge weapon for him. He had a swinging strike rate in the 20s with that changeup. That's very good. His fastball swinging strike rate was really good. I look at him as someone that if he just puts it, if he makes a few tweaks, and this was his first extended stretch in the majors, and he was transitioning from the bullpen to the starting rotation, I think Dylan Bundy's someone that has so much room to grow. And the fact that he was even decent last year is really impressive.
Would you guys rather have Dylan Bundy or Luke Weaver?
Well, is Weaver, Bundy. Yeah. I mean, Weaver's probably not going to have a job.
That's what I was
going
to ask.
Yeah.
Fine. Bundy or Yordano Ventura?
Bundy, for sure.
Eduardo Rodriguez, who has a non-serious knee injury.
And who also may not have a job. So
Bundy.
Bundy. And so Chris has Bundy 199th. I have him 233rd. When you get that low in the rankings, a 40-spot difference isn't as big as it sounds. I have him. Do you happen to know where you have him at starting pitcher? Because I have him 66th, Bundy, which I was actually surprised it was that high. So I don't feel like I'm low on Bundy. I mentioned Blake Snell when you were coming up with...
I have him 57th.
Okay, so pretty close.
Yeah, Blake Snell.
Yeah, I mentioned when I was coming up when you were coming up with
there's a lot of really interesting second year guys. I will consider Bundy a second year guy. You throw him in there with Sean Manaea, Jameson Taillon, Tyler Glasnow, a lot of guys that like some showed more than others as rookies, but they're all still mostly unformed. They're all in kind of the same range.
Joe Musgrove.
Sure.
Joe Musgrove. I feel like I've already made reference to this a lot on the podcast. I'm going to the next 3 months, I'm sure. But starting pitcher from like 35 to 80, it's
just take like your pick.
Shake him up and toss him out and see where they land.
And Chris is higher on Michael Brantley than the consensus. Consensus is 166 for Brantley. Chris says 87th overall for Michael Brantley.
And that. I love Michael Brantley. I just think he's a fantastic player. His ability to hit for power, and it's not huge power, but you know, when he was healthy, 15 to 20 homers, 45 doubles in consecutive years. His ability to do that while hitting for a high average, and I think he's a natural high average guy because of his low strikeout rate. He's never struck out more than 76 times in a season. He struck out 56 and 51 times in 2014 and 15. That combination, and he might be someone who's more valuable in head-to-head points than Roto. So that could explain the difference. But even then, he was a second or third round pick, you know, in 2015?
Yeah, he was. But
the shoulder injuries are a concern.
That's the thing. I mean, that I know from personal experience that Michael Brantley was a player who, we knew he had this injury going into spring training. It was probably going to be a short-term thing.
Yep.
I was willing to wait out the first couple weeks of the season or however long it would take him to get back. I spent like a 6th, 7th round pick on him, whatever it ended up being with that injury discount. And he never really came back.
Yeah.
And it was one fake out after another, pretty much right up until August, just consuming
he
a roster
in 11
spot,
games.
Preventing me from filling that outfield, from trading for a higher end outfielder, because I'm eventually going to get Brantley back. So I kind of feel like Brantley ruined at least one of my teams last year.
Yep,
and that wound is still fresh. So I mean, maybe. Maybe his shoulder will be fine this year, or maybe we're still seeing a continuation of the same story here where, he goes in for...
But if you can get him in the 14th round instead of the 6th round, that feels like a steal. If I can get him in the 10th or 11th round, I'm going to be pretty happy about that because I have a chance to get a top 10 outfielder.
Absolutely. But you have him 87th, which is more like, a 7th, 8th rounder? That might be a little early for me. Just a little early. I haven't won 19th, but 87 seems a little aggressive.
Okay. Would you rather have Steven Piscotty or Michael Brantley?
I would rather have Piscotty.
Yeah.
I have Brantley higher. I just think the upside's a lot higher.
David Dahl or Brantley?
I believe I have Dahl higher.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And Chris is lower on three players than consent, more than three, but three he picked. Interesting. I kind of like this guy here. Andrew Benintendi, you are lower on. Michael Conforto and Eric Hosmer. Andrew Benintendi, consensus 99th overall.
That feels way too high to
that
me.
That does. I was thinking, like, he's going to be a late round pick. I didn't realize. Top 100 player.
I look at him, and he's obviously a really good player. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I wonder, like, is he going to be a really good fantasy player? Like, he really has to develop a lot as a power hitter, I think. And I'm not so sure I feel comfortable with that. But on the other hand, he could be Michael Brantley.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Does he remind you a little bit of Michael Brantley?
He does have a very Michael Brantley-ish profile. You know, decent power. He's shown, you know, in 2015 when he was in A-ball, he actually showed much better than decent power, but that was 54 games.
This is Andrew Benintendi.
Andrew Benintendi. He could be a Michael Brantley-esque player, but if I can get Michael Brantley 70 spots later, I just think that makes way too much sense.
I've read some evaluations for Benintendi, I guess a little more optimistic about how his power is going to develop. They make the Andrew McCutchen comparison, yeah, who, you know, of course, was a first rounder, has been a first rounder for most of his career.
But is that just because they have the same first name? Like, sometimes I think the scouts just get lazy.
Well, I mentioned before,
it was the numbers,
I mentioned
look,
before
number
that
Yoan Moncada,
is the best prospect in baseball. That's true for most publications, but Baseball America actually likes Benintendi
more. I think
more.
Baseball Prospectus does too.
Yeah, so that kind of, I mean, there's upside here that I think goes beyond what his actual minor league production has been. Obviously, it's a very short minor league track record. He was just drafted, what, 2015?
Yep.
Seventh overall pick. My concern with Benintendi is less, I'm not willing to gamble on the upside, is just I'm not sure the Red Sox are quite ready to play him every day. He was mostly just played against right-handers down the stretch last year and did very well against him, hit about 290-something, I think. But if he's not an everyday player, that's not an impact player in fantasy. Maybe he overcomes that very quickly, but I think 99th is putting too much faith in that happening.
And the Red Sox have a track record of turning these undersized outfielders into solid producers. Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley have turned into legitimate power threats in Boston. And I don't want to overstate the case. He does have 20 homers in 151 minor league games, 9 in 97 last year. I think that's probably the more realistic pace. And I just, top 100, though, just feels too early for someone with a limited track record.
I think Benintendi could be a more of a points league guy because I don't know what to, you know, you're not going to say the first 34 games of his career are indicative of what's going to happen in the future, but he had 11 doubles. Two home runs and 11 doubles.
No, he was a huge doubles and triples guy in the minors.
He makes real solid contact, too. He's a good athlete. Yeah, he's a good player.
Strikeout to walk ratio is going to be great. His approach at the plate is great. He's great.
Michael Conforto, the industry is hoping for a bounce back. They have him 186th on Fantasy Pros. Chris, 287th overall, toward the back of the top 300, Michael Conforto.
Might be a little low. I could be talked into moving him up. Anyone in that 250 range is movable, but are we, one, sure he's going to play every day? Do we think he can hit lefties at all? The Mets don't seem to. And I just, the power he showed in his first year was a pretty big outlier based on his minor league track record.
He is why I get concerned about second-year players.
Yeah, no, I was so high on him going into last year after the way that partial rookie season went. But I don't think you need to be talked into moving him up. First of all, no, he's not projected to start in the outfield. Yeah. Maybe they trade Jay Bruce.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about them finding room for him.
But, I mean, he just gave us nothing. No reason for optimism last year. It's completely just hoping that he recaptures that form from a couple years ago, and maybe he will. But like I haven't quite gone quite as deep as you. I'm only through 275 in Roto rankings. But my last outfielder ranked is Brett Gardner in Roto, who is only 69th among outfielders for me. Michael Conforto is 90-something. So, I mean, it's not even close. 95th. So I've ranked through 275, I ranked 69 outfielders. Conforto is 95th. Where is he going to end up? Like, probably mid-400s.
Yeah,
I don't really want anything
to do
with
the big
with
thing him. Is maybe you believe in his skill set and you think that the fact that the Mets haven't given him an opportunity to face left-handed pitching doesn't necessarily mean he can't hit them. On the other hand, he's had 68 plate appearances against them. He has 8 hits.
He's batting 104 against lefties.
129 in his career with a 336 OPS against lefties.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
129. I have 104 in 2016 and 214 in 2015. Yeah.
Like, okay. There's a chance.
Three for four.
That's a tiny sample size. It might not be indicative of anything, but you're wishing a lot on him.
Finally, Eric Hosmer. You're lower on Eric Hosmer, who was he finally had a 20 homer season. He hit 25 in 158 games. He also struck out more than he had. I think that was career high. 57 walks, 132 strikeouts.
It was, yeah.
266 batting average with those 25 homers and a very nice 104 runs batted in for Hosmer. 15th best first baseman in points, 13th in Roto last year, so he wasn't even that good. But first 2 months of the season, holy cow, he hit 330
with
10 homers and 929 OPS. The consensus is 84th overall. You say 172nd overall for Hosmer.
I don't see any reason why 84th overall.
That's
maybe
a high pick.
Maybe I'm too low, but I can't see taking what looks like a pretty middle-of-the-road first baseman.
I think it's because first base... Maybe it's because first base is so limited.
Sure.
Although, who did we... Oh, really. With Ian Desmond now. Ian Desmond does make it a deeper position. I think it's very limited. This is what I'd say. I hate first base. Like, if you have to fall back on Adrian Gonzalez, who's... What is Gonzalez
how is,
for you?
How is
why,
Adrian...
Yeah, why would
Adrian
you...
Adrian Gonzalez is 16th for me.
All right, who's 10th?
Jose Abreu.
Who didn't have a good season.
Right. That's not so bad. Who's 12th?
12th is Hanley Ramirez.
I've got Chris Davis 10th, Hanley Ramirez 12th.
That's a little risky.
I've got Napoli right behind Eric Hosmer. That seems dumb. I'd rather have Mike Napoli. Like, I know he doesn't he doesn't have a job right now. But
we need one of those.
Sure. But if he gets an everyday job, wouldn't you rather have Mike Napoli?
I don't know.
I
think Napoli's batting average might be dreadful.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a lot more, and this sounds funny to say, because Hosmer's, of course, had his ups and downs. But with Napoli, I mean, he had basically been washed out from mixed league use going into last year. So I think there's a lot more variance to what Napoli could do for you. I agree that Hosmer at 84th is way too high. That's, you know, kind of where I have, like, Evan Gattis. That's still... What, that's seventh round, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason to pay up for that caliber of first baseman, somebody who's not going to set you apart
He's not a difference maker. I think he's like the platonic ideal of an average first baseman. He's a corner infielder. I don't think he's even a first baseman in Roto especially. There's too many guys who can do what he does better.
Okay. Now, Hosmer did deal with wrist soreness at the end of last year, and he really slumped like the last 3 weeks. But even before that, I mean, like the first 2 months, I said 330 with 10 home runs, 929 OPS. The next 3 months for Hosmer, 233 with a 663 OPS.
He's also a 25% fly ball rate guy, which is it's really hard to hit 20 home runs, as his career has shown. And there's a really high floor here, or a really low floor here, because he could have another 9 homer season like he did 2 years ago.
All right, guys. Scott, final word? Did I jump in there?
Well, I was just going to say I've spent a lot of the last 6 years looking at partial seasons from Eric Hosmer and trying to make future projections based on that, and it's never gone well. So
I just look at what he is overall, and the track record is very mediocre.
But he did get the home run bump. It wasn't just middle infielders, apparently. It was
sure,
also
but
Eric
he did
Hosmer.
Get 21% home run to fly ball ratio. His career rate's 13.4. When Eric Hosmer regresses in that regard, I think he's a 15 to 18 homer guy.
All right, we got a few emails here. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com. I want to know, though, who's going to win the Super Bowl?
The Patriots.
Over the?
Seahawks. That's very boring.
Really? The Seahawks? Nobody's taking the Seahawks right now. They look like the fourth best team in the NFC.
Atlanta Falcons
Scott's
are going to win the Super Bowl.
Fired up about the Falcons
now. Homer pick.
That's,
why not?
I that's the MVP, Matt Ryan. I don't care.
Falcons are dangerous. They are. I feel like they've beaten up on some pretty crappy teams lately. But
lately, they've, you know, they had a should have been win against the Seahawks. They had...
They're good.
Yeah,
the defense.
They should have been winning against the Chiefs.
I just want to know, yeah, like can some team, because they play like the Rams and the Niners lately, Panthers.
So did the Seahawks.
Can
so
they? But that was a while ago.
The Packers had a pretty crappy late schedule.
Since
too.
Since they lost Desmond Trufant, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
They're a team that's been able to throw on them because their pass defense has been pretty good lately. I don't know. I wonder if it's schedule related.
Probably.
But no, they're good, those Falcons. Let's see, who are they going to face in the second round? They're going to face probably the Seahawks. Yeah. So your two Super Bowl.
Last Seahawks-Falcons. Last Seahawks-Falcons playoff game was a ton of fun.
Yeah, it was.
I don't remember it.
It was the one where the Seahawks had the crazy comeback in the second half. Falcons went up huge early, right?
I mean, I remember the one against the Packers where they recovered the onside kick.
I think, but didn't the Falcons,
it was like 4 or 5
didn't the
years
Falcons
ago.
Hold on and win? I should know.
Did they?
This.
I thought the Seahawks did. I have no idea.
Man, I should know this. I've been a football fan for too long. All the big games just have kind of melded together.
All those big Falcons games.
Yeah, right. all right, here are your emails from fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Dan in Raleigh, North Carolina. What should I do with Joseph Gallo? He actually wrote Joey. What should I do with Joey Gallo? I have him in a dynasty league. Should I try to trade him for a major league player or wait it out and hope he turns into Chris Davis with a C?
Could be Chris Davis with a K.
Yeah, good point.
I think you have to gauge the trade market right now and see if his name still carries value. I imagine his prospect star's taking a pretty big hit. I'm never going to be able to quit Joey Gallo. I love players like that. He's just a ridiculous outlier that's kind of unlike any player we've ever seen before, really.
Yeah.
Like, nobody strikes out that much in the minors. It just doesn't happen. And if you do, you're not a player. And the fact that he can makes me believe that he's special, but...
He really hasn't the last couple of years, though. Even his minor league production has been lackluster.
Yeah,
so
last season in particular.
I'm ready to... jump ship on Gallo. Like, if you can't get anything for him, you might as well hold on and see where it takes you. But if you can get something of value for him, I think it's time to cash in those chips.
He's settled in as a very, like, off-season Chris Davis kind of player in AAA, which is worrying. He's hitting .224 with an .841 OPS, 155 games, 39 home runs. He could do that in the majors, maybe. But that's not a fantasy.
So would you take, like, a number three outfielder for him?
I mean, it's with Dynasty League rules, it's hard to gauge value when you're not in the league or don't have full rundown of rules. But I think, you know, if it's a big piece for right now or, you know, a lesser name prospect who you do see having value long term, I would like to do that.
Would you take Odubel Herrera?
If he was cheap, if he had a low keeper cost, I would.
Okay. Justin from Michigan. My leagues I play in are category leagues. Categories like extra base hits, walks, strikeouts, hits, and the plus the standard. Oh, okay. So five normal categories plus extra base hits, walks, strikeouts, and hits. So that's nine hitting categories. For pitchers, we have the standard five. We also have home runs allowed, walks, whip. That's, you know, and quality starts. Should I use roto rankings or points rankings?
Points rankings. Those are all things that are taken into account in point scoring.
Okay. Use points. And Andrew from NOLA. Dear Ozzy, Dansby, and Ronald.
Those are all Braves prospects.
Oh. Yeah, you were thinking Ozzy
Smith. I was thinking Ozzy Smith,
Who the hell is a shortstop named Ronald? Yeah. 12-team roto.
Did Ron Gant play shortstop?
Second base.
Mm.
12-team roto, on-base percentage instead of average. I'm heavily struggling with who to keep in this league. Already keeping Bogarts, Correa, Bryant, and Contreras. So he's keeping Bogarts, Correa, Bryant, and Contreras. So he's got some infielders. Pick the other three out of these keepers. Dansby Swanson, Greg Bird, Hunter Renfroe, Aaron Sanchez, Yasiel Puig, Jonathan Scope, Chris Sale, first round keeper.
I think I would go Sanchez, Sale, and Scope.
Aaron Sanchez, Chris Sale, Jonathan Scope.
I agree on Sanchez. I think you got to keep Swanson, even though you have so many shortstops. Like, I just don't think anyone else upside compares on this list, except Sale, of course. But for your first round pick, like, I just I don't know who else is being kept, of course, but
yeah, but you like, have
Sale
to take
doesn't
into account
deserve a first round pick in a 12-team league.
But he's a second round pick.
Yeah, but why are you settling for a second round pick with your first round?
You have to take into account the player pool's shallow.
I understand.
If the other aces are kept and you're not getting Sale in the second round, then you might want to take him in the first round.
I obviously don't know who else is being kept, but
why don't you send Andrew an email?
All right, what's your answer? I'm not really excited about a third name on this list, be it Scope, who Chris picked, or Renfro, who might be my next choice. So I guess I'll say Sale, but I mean you really need to think about whether or not it seems like you could get somebody better with that first round pick.
Okay. That's it for today's show. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Chris and Scott.
Thank you.
I wish Heath was here to see this email from somebody in New Orleans addressing us with three Braves prospects names, because he says there are no Braves prospects out there. He doesn't even live in the state
of Georgia. Heath says there's no Braves fans.
Yeah, that's what
there's Braves fans everywhere.
Braves fans.
People my age are Braves fans because of Turner Broadcasting.
That's what I tried to tell him.
I've mentioned this before, but this kid I went to college with.
Yeah, there's.
He was a Braves. No, he was a Braves, Cowboys, and Bulls fan. I hated him.
That's the worst.
That's disgusting, dude. Give me a break.
Yeah, I know a lot of Braves fans.
You do?
Yeah.
I mean,
I know CBS,
Scott. That was the only national.
I don't know that many baseball fans.
That's true.
Isn't that sad? Yeah. I live growing up in South Florida.
I don't know many baseball fans either. Yeah. To be honest, like I encounter people, they find out what my job is. They want to talk about football. Okay, fine. I'll talk about football with you. That's not exactly my wheelhouse. Can we just talk about baseball here? Yeah.
Scott wants to show off.
You need more friends in their 50s.
For Scott and Chris, I'm Adam. We'll talk to you next week, everybody. Happy New Year.